Comedian and writer Richard Herring presents the fifth and final programme in his series in which he investigates bad habits that affect us in the workplace. Today, he finally explores procrastination.
It absolutely ruins your life because you end up in this sort of fuzzy prison where you can't enjoy the moment. You've constantly got homework to do that you haven't started yet. And it's constantly eating away at you and eating away any crumbs of happiness you've got. You can't even sit down and just watch a soap opera for half an hour without thinking, look what you're doing. You're pathetic. You're watching a soap opera. You're ruining your career, you moron. Why don't you just get it done? So it's really horrible.
Writer Charlie Brooker speaking eloquently about that nightmare of our own making that is procrastination. That ever-tugging, yet self-defeating urge within us to avoid the task at hand by doing literally anything else other than the thing we're meant to be doing, in the vain hope that some tiny, industrious elves might appear and do our work for us in return for an acorn cup of beer.
I'll get it done in a panic and hurry. Procrastination. That's my vocation.
You get no sympathy from anyone. Because you know it's a mess of your own making. That's what's so disgusting about it. I write a lot of stuff that is quite angry and sharp, I suppose you would say, in tone. And that's probably because I'm constantly in a bad mood when I'm writing. I hate writing. I hate it. Every keystroke is like a little knife in the ribs because most of the time I'm doing it under duress because I've left it so late. I'm so angry with myself that I hate every second. It's pathetic.
I am the king of the procrastinators, and like Brooker, I'm frustrated by the amount of time I waste doing absolutely nothing at all. If I got the work done, I could go out into the world and have some fun. But instead, I slouch around in my own funk, filled with guilt and self-loathing, willing myself to get on with it, but deciding it would be best just to play online Scrabble. Perversely, it's almost enjoyable knowing that you're scuppering your life so willingly. So in a bid to understand my own failings, I turned to a world expert in the field, a man who spent the best part of his career busying himself with procrastination, if that's not an oxymoron.
Hello, my name is Tim Pitchell. I'm a professor of psychology at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada, and I specialize in the study of procrastination. I was studying people's goals in their lives and how it affected their well-being. And it was only when I started interviewing very successful people about their lives that I realized that what undermined their well-being the most was procrastination. And in a very profound sense, I see procrastination as a deeply existential issue. Life is short. If you want to make something of your life, you've got to do the things that you're intending to do. About 20% of the population seems to be in a condition where they procrastinate so much it interferes with their ability to work or maintain relationships. The most common emotion associated with procrastination is guilt. But in the workplace, what really I'm struck by is that people threaten their jobs every day with procrastination. I get emails from around the world of people who are on the brink of losing their jobs because they're not getting anything done.
In a way, it's comforting to know that procrastination at work is quite so rife. Many of you are no doubt listening to this programme whilst you're supposed to be working. Get back to work! Still, this is only 15 minutes long, and it might provide some solution to your problem. And if it doesn't, the next programme might, or the one after. So best stay tuned, just in case, eh? Most of us work at computers, which are all connected to the internet, simultaneously the greatest research tool known to man and a time-eating black hole. Charlie Brooker.
The problem is that the internet is like a perfect storm because it's constantly updated. If they froze the internet, I'd probably have read it all by now and I wouldn't need to keep going back and looking to see if there's anything new.
So is everyone using the same cyberspace-based delay tactics? Is the Pope Catholic? Hold on, I'll just check on Wikipedia.
I usually go to, like, MySpace. I spend, like, 2 hours on there every day.
I go on Hotmail, look on Wikipedia, just check out random facts. It was Facebook, but that's been banned, so we can't go on that.
Shopping sites, that kind of stuff. I spend a frightening amount of time doing stuff which is nothing to do with work. Up to 20%, I'd have thought.
A simple laptop is a portal to hilarious video clips, shopping, social networking, gambling, and pretty much any kind of gratification you can think of, unless your company blocks those particular sites. Hardly a surprise, then, that presenteeism, the technical name for workers being there but doing nothing, costs the British economy up to £900 million a year, which is roughly what online poker has cost me.
Procrastination. To reprehensibly and irreplicably put off for today what you should be doing tomorrow anyway. From the Latin, procrastinator.
Technology has increased procrastination exponentially. It's a huge problem, and it's wasting billions of dollars for companies in terms of unproductive time.
I wonder if our bosses know we're doing nothing. They probably do, because the chances are they're doing nothing as well. New research says we each spend an average of 839 minutes online a week in total, getting on for 2 working days of not working. The bosses at AlphaTalk Limited, a communications company that sells phone numbers, suspected that there was a problem of internet misuse amongst its employees. Zafar Majid worked there.
We had staff whose monitors we were not able to see. As you walk past, you see that sort of familiar movement of their hand with the mouse. You can tell that they're minimizing something or just closing a window, so they don't want the managers or the bosses to see what they've been doing.
So they devised a computer program called SpyShore, the newest breed of office surveillance equipment, launched in 2007. Their mission? To help bosses beat procrastinating employees at their own game. But how does it do it?
It tracks all the websites that anybody has visited on a computer. It tracks all emails sent and received. It has a built-in keylogger, which will record all the keystrokes that you've ever typed onto the keyboard.
Every keystroke? Oh, dear. Do you think pressing delete over and over again might put them off the scent?
There's a screenshot capture feature which basically takes a snapshot of the computer screen at regular intervals of 1 minute or 5 minutes. And at the end of the day, the person who's doing the monitoring will be able to see in visual form what was on that computer screen at various times during the day.
Big Brother is watching you, and whatever you're watching, which is probably Big Brother. So how would you feel if you discovered that your bosses were watching your every internet click?
I'd be a bit worried about that, but only in the sense of they found me out.
If I discovered that they were searching for stuff, I'd be pretty scared.
I don't think that in an office it's unfair for the company to look at the website I'm looking at during the day.
There are better ways of getting people to be more focused and more driven in what they do and more full of pride, I guess.
And what about privacy? Most companies will have an internet usage policy which will have guidelines on obvious misuse, i.e. accessing pornography or sending offensive emails to someone in accounts. But surely the odd bit of Facebook and Amazon's okay? Well, if your company has bought something like Zafar's software, there's a good chance you won't even know about it.
Whilst this program obviously can run secretly in the background, we always advise our customers that the way to do it properly is to have an acceptable user policy in place for your staff. The problem is, you know, a lot of people still purchase this with a view to sort of using it secretly, because when they suspect misuse, they want to catch somebody out.
Procrastination supremo Tim Pitchell doesn't think this is going too far. In fact, he thinks it's fair enough. And that we're wrong to imagine that during work hours, the internet is a private place for us to mess around in.
When we were in a workplace before, employers were always watching what you're doing, whether it would be a factory or an office. People would see whether you're hanging out at the water cooler. That would be the classic example of the procrastinator. And so I think there's a lot of naivety around this technology for many users that make them believe that, well, it's like my telephone. No one should be eavesdropping. No, it's not like your telephone. It's part of a new workspace, and the employer has a right to manage that workspace. And what we're working out is how that should be managed, and that's the new social dilemma.
So does this mean our bosses have the right to trawl through all the emails we've sent and received and can sack us if they find something they don't like? Most employees don't think twice about the internet policy at their workplace. We spoke to someone who was forced to. He was working in a public sector department as an analyst in a graduate training position. The bosses were investigating one of his colleagues for unrelated reasons and were surprised to discover a high level of personal emails in their inbox. So they extended their investigation to the entire department, and 25 of the 30 faced disciplinary action. This is a cautionary tale about how wrong a bit of idle email banter can all go. He's asked to remain anonymous, and we've disguised his voice.
The organisation had an internet and email policy, as most organisations do, but it wasn't adequately shared with its employees. So an employee wouldn't have known about it unless they'd done some serious digging. I've always been conscious that any email will be stored, so I'm very careful with what I write in emails. So I wasn't actually concerned at all. I had been working there at that time for 2 years, so I'd probably sent thousands and thousands of emails. Having a look through sent items and thinking back, I couldn't think of any emails that would be considered inappropriate.
So far, so normal. But suddenly, things took a turn for the worse.
Letters started to be sent out to people, possibly to their home addresses, saying, we're conducting this investigation into the misuse of email, and we consider that some of your emails are inappropriate, and so we'll be fully investigating this matter. So I went to a misconduct hearing. In the end, one email out of the thousands that I would have sent was considered so serious that it constituted an act of gross misconduct. That particular email was a satirical cartoon. It was nothing more than that. It was not offensive in nature. There's no doubt in my mind that everybody's inbox in any workplace would contain three emails not dissimilar to the ones in my box. I felt like I'd been accused of some crime. Gross misconduct are things like theft, sexual assault, violence in the workplace. And I just didn't see how that email could come anywhere near being gross misconduct. So I appealed that sanction, and it was in fact lowered to misconduct. I was demoted, which meant that I would take a significant pay cut. I was barred from any promotion for a period of 12 months. It was humiliating. I'd just given 2 years of hard work to this organisation, and what I got back from them was a final written warning on my record.
Although he remained in his job for a short while, he left to work at another company. This appears to be an extreme case, but according to our research, stories like these are on the increase. So what should businesses be doing? Tim Pitchell again.
I think we might see a whole change in the way people work. What they'll be paid for is their productivity as opposed to their time at their desk. My hope is that 10 or 20 years from now that we will work in a community like that where there's a sense of shared responsibility. But that's an optimistic approach.
Should we come down so hard on procrastinators? Perhaps taking time away from work and cyber socialising allows us to come back refreshed and more productive. And maybe some spark of brilliance will occur subconsciously when we're not directly thinking about our job. Maybe genius is in fact 1% inspiration, 79% perspiration and 20% procrastination. As with all the bad habits we've looked at in this series, we need to keep a degree of balance. If we're occasionally lazy or late, then we can make up for it on another occasion. Conversely, workaholics and perfectionists need to be reminded that it's all right to sometimes take your foot off the gas. A little bit of procrastination will do you good, but if it takes over your whole life, then it's maybe the most destructive vice of them all. And if Charlie Brooker's vision of a dystopian future is to be believed, it might take us all down in the end. So get back to work.
We do seem to, as a species, we've invented more methods of procrastination. We'll just all end up as blobby sacks of skin and water, lolling around like beanbags, clicking repeatedly, like lab rats who sort of learnt to click a little button and get a bit of grain or something. That's the sum total of mankind's achievements. That's why we don't build great cathedrals or erect pyramids anymore, isn't it? It's because we're all sitting around wasting time pushing buttons like we're babies dealing with a Fisher-Price activity centre. Procrastination. I need a
vacation. Bad Habits was presented by Richard Herring and produced by Lisa Greenwell. The series was a unique production for BBC Radio 4.